from deep inside your radio.
Well, that's one place it's from, and another place is from Southern California. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. And strangely enough, for somebody who was born and raised in Southern California and has been on the radio way too long, frighteningly short amount of time from actually Los Angeles, the city that most people identify with Southern California. Was on the radio. I was on the radio in Pasadena, God help us, for 3 years, three, 4 years. And then the other place, the home of the homeless for a long time, and a little squidge of time in between in Los Angeles at a radio station in the city of Los Angeles. And now back again, the Southern California Le Show Dome, located within the friendly confines of the City of Angels. Gil Garcetti, mayor, about which, you know, I have no idea. Haven't been paying attention. Speaking of which, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. A Roman Catholic priest. No, he doesn't go into a bar. It's a different story. Oh, by the way, before we get into that, just one note. Among all the radio facilities I've been in the history of this broadcast, what a novelty to be in some place that's got daylight flooding through windows. Here at Mike Curb. Is that the name of the building? The Mike Curb building, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, check it. Check him out. Recording star and lieutenant governor. There's the CV for you. Anyway, lovely daylight. Thank you for that, Mike, or whoever. Mike's person. Dateline Montreal. A Roman Catholic priest says his attempt to raise the issue of sexual abuse with colleagues resulted in he himself, being ostracized. I guess that means they put him through an ostracizer. And eventually fired from a famous Montreal church. That you know the one. The story told by Reverend Andre Sampson suggests that the Vatican's promises of a new, more open approach to dealing with sexual crimes hasn't necessarily translated through the church rank and file, don't you know? This all began in June when a distraught young man confided in Sampson about being sexually assaulted by a priest. Well, that doesn't happen. From another parish. Oh, I see. He says he now wants to go public about what happened next in order to break the code of silence that he says endures even now. I had confidence in the church. I had confidence in St. Joseph's Oratory, Sampson said. That's the name of the church. The famous church. You've heard of it. Come on. And he's a university professor to boot. Well, not to be booted yet. Perhaps I'm naive, but I never would have believed that it would go this far. 2 years ago, the Congregation of the Holy Cross, the organization that runs the church, agreed to issue an apology and pay up to $18 million in an historic compensation agreement for sexual abuse committed over a five-year span. Sampson said the priests in the order often discussed the headline-grabbing multi-million dollar payout during their routine lunchtime gatherings. Oh, to be a fly on the wall! That's why he was surprised when he was swiftly reprimanded in the dining hall. That's the most painful place to be reprimanded, ladies and gentlemen. Just a warning, for sharing the disturbing story of an 18-year-old man who'd come to see him at confession, the guy who said he'd been sexually assaulted by a priest. The 18-year-old man refused to name his aggressor or the church. Sampson says he'd listened over the years to many young people in crisis. He said he'd never seen one in such intense psychological distress. He said he advised the man to seek professional counseling or to watch Dr. Phil. No, he didn't say that. Come on now. Deeply troubled, Sampson thought it was important he recount the story to his colleagues. I shared my suffering, he says, and my anger toward that priest who had ruined the life of a young person. But he said his story was quickly interrupted. He was cut off within 2 or 3 minutes while discussing the issue with three other priests over lunch. The community superior became enraged, Sampson said. He said, "Don't talk about this here. It can't be. We don't talk about this here." Later that day, he alleges the same community superior, Claudel Petit Homme, that's right, French for little man, barred him from eating lunch in the dining hall. Gets better. At the time, Sampson considered quitting or not having lunch, quitting lunch. But he said he was encouraged by a colleague to stay on where he'd worked part-time for about a year. The oratory declined a request by the Canadian press to interview Petit Homme. Sampson said he unsuccessfully asked another superior to help him overturn his expulsion from the refectory. Then on Sunday, last Sunday, he said he was fired for reasons that he described as relatively minor offenses, such as failing to do up his collar all the way. I'm reading this. He also refused to put the host wafer on worshipers' tongues during flu season, a stance he took because he has a heart condition, and because he'd made mistakes in the wording of absolution during confession. He said his superior denied his firing had anything to do with him rehashing the sexual assault allegation over lunch. So, ladies and gentlemen, just a word to the wise. Do your collar up all the way. Avoid the fuss. Hello, welcome to the show.
Everybody's got a thing, but some don't know how to handle it. Always reaching out in vain, just taking the things not worth having. Don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing, baby. 'Cause I'll be standing on the side when you're checking out. Say a star lives a track, and that you must go other places. Just don't you feel too bad when you get fooled by smiling faces. Don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing, baby. 'Cause I'll be standing on the side when you check it.
Get off
your tree.
Don't you worry about it.
From the Mike Curb building in Los Angeles, as the former mayor of the city used to call it. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, telling some secrets. That's what we do these days, until they stop us. Dateline Guantanamo Bay Navy Base in Cuba, one of the alleged 9/11 plotters suffered a head injury in CIA custody that caused memory loss and delusions and memory loss. This according to a Pentagon defense lawyer in court at a pretrial hearing focusing on the UN Convention Against Torture. Now, unlike the trade agreements, so-called trade agreements that Eve Smith was discussing with us here last week, the UN Convention Against Torture was discussed widely, publicly, before it was passed and signed and ratified by this country. So you see, we publicly discuss the ones we ignore. And the disclosure of the head injury was the first public allegation of injury to the accused, Amar el-Baluchi, the nephew of the alleged 9/11 mastermind, KSM, and one of the five captives facing trial and the death penalty maybe late next year. This according to the Miami Herald. Attorney James Connell invoked two of Baluchi's unclassified Guantanamo medical records in a bid to argue that not everything the captives say about their treatment at the CIA's overseas black prison network constitutes national security secrets. At issue is whether the 9/11 defense attorney's challenge of is the challenge by the defense attorneys for the 9/11 defendants of a military commission's order that obliged the attorneys to make sure the prisoners don't tell foreign courts or human rights groups their memories of what the CIA did to them during the years before they were brought to Gitmo. That is to say, an order that says the CIA owns their memories. I guess to make a book deal, you'd need... It's widely known from a declassified investigative report that agents waterboarded Khalid Sheikh Mohammed 183 times. That 183rd really did the job. Less is known about what agents did to the other four defendants. The lawyers argue that the U.S. government is violating the Convention Against Torture. Yeah, now. By defining the captives' accounts of their treatment as classified. Don't you see? What's clear is that there is a right to complain, said the lawyer. He invoked two medical reports from September and October of 2006 that report suspected detainee maltreatment dating back 3 or 4 years, one signed by a psychiatrist identified as Dr. One. It's better than the movies, come on. And another by a Navy medic called HM6. Baluchi, according to the psychiatrist's notation, reported auditory and visual hallucinations. Man, when we were kids, we'd pay money for that. For 1 or 2 weeks with slow resolution, reporting headaches, pain, and intermediate memory problems. Connell said he was unable to say anything else beyond what he was permitted to say inside the maximum security courtroom about the head injury his client suffered. The only possible public information about the treatment his client suffered was a scene showing a CIA prisoner named Amar being beaten in Zero Dark 30. The lawyer refused to respond to a direct question of whether Bellucci was subjected to an enhanced interrogation technique called walling that was approved for CIA use at the time of Bellucci's capture. According to the CIA Inspector General, says that walling consisted of an interrogator quickly and firmly pushing a detainee into a flexible false wall so that his shoulder blades hit the wall. His head and neck are supported with a rolled hood or towel to help prevent whiplash. Isn't that nice? Thoughtful. Thoughtful, enhanced. Enhanced, but thoughtful. That's us. The development suggested the September 11th defendants may be able to someday say in public what, if any, damage the interrogation techniques caused, but not to specify the technique. The techniques were approved for use between 2002 and 2005, you may recall. If you don't, give John Yu a call at Berkeley. He'll explain it all. They included putting a captive in a box with a harmless insect, slapping, diapering, shaving, hooding, isolating, sleep depriving, forcing captives into stress positions, making them listen to Rush Limbaugh. In court, Connell held up a sealed envelope that he said contained Bellucci's handwritten account of his CIA treatment to the UN's special rapporteur on torture. The lawyer said he hadn't read it, wouldn't vouch for whether it contradicted or confirmed any classified information the lawyer had seen, and he should be able to send it to the rapporteur as Bellucci's unclassified memories. But the prosecutor says the U.S. government has absolute control of U.S. captives' CIA memories because where they were held and what was done to them is classified as sources and methods. Nothing came of the 2006 medical professional's suspected detainee treatment, mistreatment report. And all you can say is maybe it didn't happen at the black site. Maybe he was just playing NFL football. Maybe that's what happened. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. Because, you know, the concussions and the thing, the head thing.
So sorry.
I hate to have to explain these things to you. So I won't. It's been a bumper week for apologies. And pull up to this bumper. This is Toronto's Mayor Rob Ford, about whom a video, reports of a video had surfaced that had him, depicted him smoking crack cocaine, which he denied for weeks and months. And this week, that came to an end.
With today's announcement, I know I embarrassed everyone in this city, and I will be forever sorry. There is only one person to blame for this, and that is myself. I know that admitting my mistake was the right thing to do, and I feel like 1,000 pounds have been lifted off my shoulders. I know what I did was wrong, and admitting it was the most difficult and embarrassing thing I have ever had to do. Folks, I have nothing left to hide. These mistakes will never, ever, ever happen again. To the residents of Toronto, I know I have let you down, and I can't do anything else but apologize. I apologize, and I'm so sorry. Again, I sincerely, sincerely, sincerely apologize. God bless the people of Toronto. Thank you very much.
He got a laugh with God bless. Toronto Mayor Rob Ford, very good apparently at saying things three times in a row and at referring to himself in the third person. But don't worry about him. Even though 1,000 pounds has been lifted from his shoulders, there's a lot left. Now to Laura Logan of CBS. You may know that CBS 60 Minutes aired a broadcast last week featuring a supposed account of an eyewitness to the Benghazi unrest and killing of the American ambassador there on September 11th of 2012. A controversial report that fell apart within days, as it turned out that the guy who talked to 60 Minutes had given a completely different story to the FBI. Here is Laura Logan of CBS.
You know, the most important thing to every person at 60 Minutes is the truth. And today the truth is that we made a mistake. We were wrong. We made a mistake. And how did this happen? Well, Dylan Davies worked for the State Department in Libya. He was the manager of the local guard force at the Benghazi Special Mission Compound. And he described for us his actions that night. He told the FBI a different story to what he told us. And, you know, that was the moment for us when we realized that we no longer had confidence in our source and that we were wrong to put him on air. And we apologized to our viewers. We will apologize to our viewers and we will correct the record on our broadcast on Sunday night.
One awaits further developments, doesn't one? I guess one has to. But wait, I'm over here now. But wait, there is so much more. There's so much more. And I'll share it with you in the merest moment, ladies and gentlemen. I swear I will. I'm right here. Don't worry about me. But apparently the apology theme is not. So, to other apologies, a German hotel has apologized for running an ad for a long romantic Kristallnacht. I said a long romantic Kristallnacht to be held on the 75th anniversary of the Nazi pogrom against Jews and their institutions. The Kristallsauna Wellness Park in Bad Klosterhausnitz. That's Bad Klosterhausnitz, not to be confused with the good Klosterhausnitz, in the former eastern German state of Thüringen, pulled the ad for the November 9th event and issued an apology via Facebook, according to a Cologne-based newspaper. Critics had posted images of the ad on social media sites with comments such as, "Thumbs up to your advertising department." In a statement issued Monday, the hotel owners apologized for their insensitive naming of this event, which was extremely inappropriate. They explained they frequently tag part of the name Kristall onto their events. See, it was just an accident. Just a lovely accident. And here's our music. Speaking of accidents. In a statement, we said, "We are extraordinarily regretful, and of course this was unintentional. Believe us, we are quite ashamed about our mistake." They changed the name of the event to The Long Romantic Night, which I bet sounds great in German. According to Express, some posted screenshots of the ad made crude jokes about the wellness center being a Heilbad or spa with hot springs, playing on the Nazi salute to Hitler. This week, Germany happens to be marking the 75th anniversary of the pogrom in which rioters destroyed 267 synagogues in Germany, Austria, and the former Czechoslovakia. But they weren't aware. How does that happen? It's nutty, isn't it? Dateline Alabama, an Alabama-based tanning salon chain. Now that's nutty right there. People paying money to turn colors that they would lynch people for being 50 years ago, 75 years ago, whatever it is. An Alabama-based tanning salon chain is under fire after running ads that suggested Native Americans brought sexy color to the first Thanksgiving. The promo, which has been pulled, featured a brunette dressed in a suede-fringed Indian-inspired dress complete with matching heels, standing alongside a woman dressed in a pilgrim dress. Chain's marketing director, David Arnett, hi David, later posted an apology on the chain's Facebook page. I guess that's where all the apologies go now. In response to the recent post from Jezebel.com, the ad I created showing a Native American in pilgriming costume was in no way intended to be offensive or racist, he wrote, I sincerely apologize if it offended anyone. I myself am Native American, and I am very proud of my heritage and skin tone. The thought process behind the ad was simply a play on my own sexy color. Again, I apologize for any offense and misunderstanding. I'm offended that he thinks he's... Dateline Long Beach, 10 years ago, Lifeway Christian Resources published a vacation Bible school curriculum they believed would introduce kids to Jesus using an Asian culture theme. But Far Out Rickshaw Rally, Racing Towards the Sun, S-O-N, became a lesson in cross-cultural miscommunication. Critics of the material said it promoted racial stereotypes. This week, Lifeway President Tom Rainer apologized for Rickshaw Rally at a gathering of about 1,000 church leaders in Long Beach. 10 years ago, we used material using racial stereotypes that offended many in the Asian American community. I wasn't part of Lifeway then, he says, but I am now. And I've recently learned the decade-old offense is still a point of hurt for some, he said in a video apology played at the conference. As president and CEO, I want to apologize. I'm sincerely sorry stereotypes were used in our materials, and I apologize for the pain they caused. He announced a new video coming out called Chop Chop for Jesus. No, he didn't. The popular Brazilian actress Tata Werneck apologized for comments she made about Jews on a national talk show in Brazil. Werneck said in a statement about her remarks on love and sex that she was deeply troubled by the reaction she has stirred in the Jewish community. She was on the Globo television network. On a show, she was asked what she would do if a gay friend was being bullied at school. Werneck said she would divert the bully's attention to a Jewish classmate. In her apology, the 30-year-old actress said, quote, I am deeply troubled by having generated this kind of reaction from the community. My intention is never to offend or harm. We were in a program about bullying, and my role there was to give the politically incorrect answers. Werneck said some of her best friends are Jewish. I guess she's too young to know that's a joke. Not anymore. Dateline Moscow, Russia apologized this week to two foreign journalists who were repeatedly questioned and detained by police during a trip to report on the 2014 Winter Olympics preparations in Sochi. Norwegian broadcaster TV2, the country's official games broadcaster, said its journalists Øystein Bogen and Ag Un had been questioned, detained, and searched by police who claimed that one of them had been using drugs. The Foreign Ministry of Russia said in a statement that local law enforcement officials abused their posts in the incidents, leading to a series of unwarranted actions toward the citizens of Norway. In this regard, we apologize to Mr. Bogen and Mr. Aun. The current situation will undoubtedly be worked out in detail, and those guilty will receive the corresponding punishment, said the Russian government. We would like to assure you that the executive authorities of the Russian Federation will take all necessary measures to avoid the repetition of similar cases in the future. You mean they won't let the guys survive? Russia, of course, is spending more than $50 billion on the Olympics, and this would damage the desired effect. The journalists have been detained several times traveling in and out of Sochi. One of them was forced to drive to a local drug clinic after officers claimed he might be on narcotics. This incident ended only when another officer arrived at the center saying there'd been a misunderstanding. A tactical mistake, says Russia, had provided false information about the journalists to law enforcement officials. That never happens. This is your brain on the war on drugs. The editor of Guns and Ammo has apologized for running a column that aroused unprecedented controversy. We don't know what the column's about, we here at the Lashodom, but apparently it was about something to do with regulating guns. Dateline Chester, England. Oh, I've been there. Yes, I remember Chester. The fine one-way system that prevents you from getting to the center of town or from getting out if there's a traffic jam? Lovely. Two 19-year-old British co-eds are in hot water after wearing dresses depicting the 9/11 attacks on New York City's Twin Towers. University of Chester, there's got a university in Chester? Amber Langford and Annie Colling have apologized for their outfits, which won them a Halloween competition at a Chester nightclub. They have nightclubs in Chester? And said they didn't intend to offend anyone. We apologize if any offense was caused. An if apology, ladies and gentlemen, the idea was to depict a serious modern-day horror that happened in our lifetime and was not intended as a joke. But their dresses emblazoned with flames and explosions have drawn condemnation from university officials. They have officials and some of their schoolmates. The students' union leaders say they utterly condemn the appalling photos which have been shared on social media. The school says an urgent investigation is underway. Speaking of apologies, TV personality. Now she's a TV personality. Sharon Osbourne has apologized to the hosts of the TV talk show The View for telling them to go F themselves in a recent interview. She was asked what makes her show, The Talk, different from The View. The Talk is on CBS. The View is on ABC. That's the difference. She, Osbourne, appeared with her co-hosts on Arsenio Hall's program on this week. That's right. Hosts of one talk show appearing with the host of another talk show to discuss a third talk show. Is there any wonder why people in this country don't know where anything is in the world? Just asking. Osbourne said she went too far when she said this. Barbara Walters, idolize her. Divine, she is superhuman. I love her. The rest can go F themselves, meaning the rest of the people on The View. She said she went too far and took the airwaves to offer an apology. I have to own this. I'm fully responsible for myself. Unfortunately, I was inappropriate, and I was trying to be funny at somebody else's expense. Please understand it was irreverent behavior, and no disrespect was meant. I'm not a person that's mean, and I apologize. Sharon Osbourne, ladies and gentlemen. Deadline New York, home improvement maker, Home Depot. No, you can't be a maker of home improvement, Associated Press. Come on now. Home Depot apologized for a tweet that showed a picture of two African-American drummers with a person in a gorilla mask in between them and asked, which drummer is not like the others? The tweet from Home Depot's official Twitter account was part of a college game day promotion on ESPN. It was quickly pulled, but not before people took screenshots of it, and it was widely circulated on social media. That bad old social media. Many others reported on the tweet. Home Depot said Friday it had fired the person and outside agency that was responsible for the tweet, but did not disclose their names. We have zero tolerance for anything so stupid and offensive, said Stephen Holmes, spokesman for the company, based in Atlanta, don't you know, where some of his best friends are. Holmes said the company is closely reviewing its social media procedures to determine how this could have happened and how to ensure it never happened again. Wesleyan University apologized this week to Native Americans and other indigenous peoples, saying it's launching an effort to repatriate human remains and cultural objects collected mostly in the 19th century, which are part of its anthropology and archaeology collections. The university has adopted a repatriation policy in compliance with the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. Didn't know about that act. And, yes, finally, to the subject of Obamacare, which generated first this apology from Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius in an appearance at a congressional hearing this week.
I am as frustrated and angry as anyone with the flawed launch of healthcare.gov. So let me say directly to these Americans, you deserve better. I apologize.
That was followed in short order by an interview with NBC News in which President Obama was asked by Chuck Todd about the fact that many people, 3 million people at last count, I believe, have gotten notices of cancellation of their insurance policies, despite the fact that, well, we'll get to the fact. You know what the fact is. Anyway, here was President Obama's response. We have it for you now. No, we don't. Okay. CD machine number one, ladies and gentlemen. It's not happening. Obama said, I'm sorry that those people are finding themselves in this situation based on assurances they got from me. He added, we've got to work hard to make sure that they know we hear them, and we're going to do everything we can to deal with folks who find themselves in a tough position as a consequence of this. This, by the way, was a series of assurances made by none other than President Obama.
I said this once or twice, but it bears repeating. And you can keep your plan if you are satisfied with it.
If you like the plan you have, you can keep it.
If you like your plan and you like your doctor, you won't have to do a thing. You keep your plan. If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan. If you've got health insurance, you can keep it. If you like your health care plan, you will keep your plan. If you've got health insurance, you like your doctor, you like your plan, you can keep your doctor, you can keep your plan.
If you have insurance that you like, then you will be able to keep that insurance. If you like your doctor or health care plan, you can keep it.
If you like your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan. If you like your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan.
If you like your private health insurance plan, you can keep your plan. If you like your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan.
If you like your private health insurance plan, you can keep it. If you want to keep the health insurance you got, you can keep it.
If you like the insurance plan you have now, you can keep it.
And if you like your insurance plan, you will keep it. So if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. If you like your plan, keep your plan. If you like your current insurance, you will keep your current insurance. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan.
If you're happy with what you got, nobody's changing it.
Not quite true. As 3 million people have attested in the last few weeks, as their health care providers become ex-providers. You may recall, ladies and gentlemen, that last year, or maybe a year before that, President Obama went on Jon Stewart's show, I think it was in 2011, and he revised his 2008 campaign slogan by saying if he had it to do over again, it would be, yes, we can, but. So in that spirit, here's the assurance he probably should have made.
You know, if you like the way you look, and you like the cut of my jib, if nothing's changed in the last 4 years, if you can still eat without needing a bib, if you like New York in June, and if you like your current health plan, it's no lie, no wish on the moon. Mm-mm. You can keep it. You know, if you like the White House Facebook page, if you like movies and walks on the beach, if your insurance plan is robust enough, with the current premiums almost within reach, if you don't know art, but you know what you like, and if you like your current health plan, it's no joke, no called third strike. You can keep it. Insurance on your own. If you like the good things in life and spending days online and on the phone, if your insurance company still likes you and you like your current health plan, it's no jive. And I'm certainly not the man. You can keep it. If you like ukulele lady in the surf or on the shore, if you like getting coverage you don't want, and if you like paying just a little bit more, if you like some surprises, and if you like your current health plan, it's no guess, not just some surmises. You can keep it. If you don't like us calling the GOP's bluff, if you don't like the fact that enough's not enough, if you don't like the way I'm strutting my stuff, then you can take your health care plan and you can keep it.
You can keep it. there's a village smith that's standing under the chestnut tree. Hear the hammer knocking, see the anvil rocking. He sings the boogie blues while he's hammering on the shoes. See the hot spots are flying like 4th of July. Even got the horses flopping pop down the avenue. Folks love the rhythm, the clang banging rhythm. You get a lot of kicks out of the blacksmith blues. He sings the boogie blues while he's hammering on the shoes. See the hot sparks are flying like 4th of July. He's even got the horses flopping pop down the avenue. Folks love the rhythm, the clang banging rhythm. You get a lot of kicks out of the blacksmith blues.
From Los Angeles, this is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, News of the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Addie?
So this is L.A.
Very well put. Nuclear bosses in England have been called to explain their actions before a committee of members of parliament as the cost of cleaning up a major nuclear power facility and reprocessing location, Sellafield, continues. The cost of cleaning it up continues to rocket.
Rockets are good.
Rockets are very good. They're exciting. Member of Parliament Margaret Hodge, she of the famous Podge, described the spiraling costs of the project as, quote, an appalling waste of money, as opposed to an attractive waste of money, and said cash was being scattered like confetti.
Everyone loves confetti.
Everyone does. Bosses from the Nuclear Decommissioning Authority appeared before the committee and faced a barrage of criticisms. The estimated cost of the cleanup had risen to $108.6 billion. But now the figure this week has escalated again to about $112 billion.
I say bye.
The hearing was told that 14 cleanup projects at the site are still behind schedule. The biggest shock is the way in which decommissioning costs are continuing to soar, says Member of Parliament Hodge. We're now talking about $100 billion or more being spent on cleaning up the nuclear waste at Sellafield, and I don't think that is the end of the sums required. The chief executive of the Nuclear Decommissioning Authority, John Clark,
that's not his real name,
said the consortium represented the best option to achieve the aims of the cleanup. He said costs will continue to increase over a number of these projects, and that is because of the nature of the projects rather than the actions or inactions of the organization. There are inherent challenges on the site. That sounds scary.
Nothing to be scared about. Challenges.
He said there are no comparable sites in Western Europe for the cleanup operation. He said, we have nuclear waste placed into facilities in the 50s and 60s with no thought as to how that was to be taken out. As we uncover issues, we find challenges are a lot more difficult than we expected, unquote.
What did they know in the 50s?
While Japan's nuclear watchdog has been trying to promote a culture of safety for the industry ever since the big thing, A new issue has been raised at the Mungju Fast Breeder Reactor Complex, a failure to adhere to proper security in order to prevent any theft of nuclear materials such as plutonium.
What are you going to do with plutonium? You can't eat it.
You cannot eat it. That is correct. The Nuclear Regulation Authority says the government-funded Japan Atomic Energy Agency built fences around restricted areas that were shorter than required. No jokes, please. At the 267-acre facility in western Japan, it also said it failed to make photocopies of IDs provided by visitors to the most sensitive areas, neglected to conduct some parts of required checkups of equipment that protect nuclear materials, and failed to update security manuals.
Who reads manuals?
Good point. So they're on the ball. Even more disturbing for some commissioners was the fact that the energy agency was not able to find the problems by itself. We are very sorry about these failures, said an official from the Japan Atomic Energy Agency. We won't let this happen again. We have other mistakes in store. No, he didn't. Deadline, Wintersburg, Arizona. Power output at one of Palo Verde Nuclear Generating Station 3 reactors has been cut because of a problem with the main steam valve. Operators at the plant 50 miles west of Phoenix discovered the problem Wednesday afternoon. The problem occurred in a valve that is normally open on one of the reactor's steam generators. The generators, of course, use water heated in the reactor to produce steam, which turns turbines connected to electrical generators. That's right. We're doing all this to make steam. Each steam generator has two main steam valves, which must be able to close in less than 5 seconds in certain situations.
Those must be special.
They are. A crew during routine maintenance inadvertently overpressurized a part of the valve control mechanism, rendering one valve inoperative. It may take several days for the problem to be repaired. Engineers are already working to fix a tiny leak in the reactor vessel at the plant that was discovered after the reactor was shut down for refueling. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, everything's fine in Arizona. A comic book... Don't look at me that way.
I'm looking like an atom.
A comic book character created to allay concerns about nuclear power in India in the wake of the disaster at the Fook plant is helping the Indian government overcome opposition to atomic energy and address a crippling electricity shortage. In a 38-page comic book, Samir, an educated local youth who lives in the city, sets out to dispel what the comic describes as the many myths surrounding nuclear science existing among villagers in India and explains to them its various benefits to the mankind. That's a quote.
And his womankind.
I bet. The comic characters ask questions such as, will my cattle die? I'm guessing the answer is no. From Shamir.
Me too.
The films on local cable television channels based on the same characters as in the comic will appear. The company has also set up exhibitions and vans with audiovisual equipment to show the film in remote villages. In the story of Budia, Samir, the college-going grandson of the village chief, tells anxious villagers that, quote, the electricity produced by nuclear power plant is clean, green, and economical. Therefore, all your crops, orchards, and fishes remain unaffected, non-polluted, and safe, he says.
Just keep him away from Japan.
You said that. I didn't. Deadline, Plymouth, Massachusetts. Federal regulators will be watching Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station's operation more closely because of complications, don't you know. During unplanned shutdowns at the reactor over the past year, the NRC released performance reports for the nation's 100 nuclear power plants. Pilgrim is one of 22 plants that fall below the federal performance standards in one or more categories. That is to say, almost one quarter of all nuclear power plants in the United States fail or fall below federal performance standards in at least one category.
75% don't.
Mm-hmm. Since January, Pilgrim has had two shutdowns in which operators were required to employ measures beyond standard procedure. Uh-oh. Due to complications during the power down process. Such incidents should be extremely rare, according to NRC's spokesman.
And there should be ponies.
There should. We will be... An NRC inspection team will visit the plant and scrutinize the root cause for recent problems, he said. Oh, they're root causers, are they? Managers and scientists are working against the clock to solve a new possible problem at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in Washington State, i.e., how much sludge can be dumped into a double-shelled radioactive waste tank before flammable gas builds up in a big bubble.
That can't happen.
at a group of waste tanks called the Sea Farm. Workers are pumping. You want to swear to that?
Adams can't swear. We're not allowed.
Workers are pumping the radioactive sludge out of these old single-shelled tanks into the more stable double-shelled one. Do you know that? The radioactive brew constantly generates hydrogen and other flammable gases. Scientists and engineers aren't sure how much the newer massive double-hulled tanks can hold before sludge burps up a major flammable gas bubble. What are you thinking about?
Thinking about nuclear Pepto-Bismol?
All the sludge in the tank must be transferred by next September under a legally binding deadline. That issue can be solved long-term, but from a perspective of meeting the 2014 milestone and being complete, it's critical to solve to make that milestone, said the assistant manager of the tank farm. Total of 56 million gallons of radioactive sludge at Hanford.
That's the world's biggest sludge collection?
I don't know. That would be good. Millstone Power Station, why do you think they call it Millstone, has been cited by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for a safety violation involving a valve for intake water used in the steam generators. NRC rates it as very low safety significance. But why do you think they call it Millstone? Deadline Tokyo, the operator of the wrecked Fuke plant, will double the pay of contract workers as part of a revamp of operations at the station after coming under criticism for its handling of cleanup efforts. Hazard pay for the thousands of workers on short-term contracts will be increased from $100 to $200 a day, TEPCO said. It will also improve meals and other conditions at the site. A Reuters investigation last month found workers' pay was being skimmed, some had been hired under false pretenses, and some contractors had links to organized crime gangs. Why might they be doing this right now? Because TEPCO this month will begin what many observers say is the most potentially dangerous part of the cleanup process, taking out fuel rods from the pool inside a reactor building in a technically challenging operation that will test the utility's abilities. Experts say the operation is tricky, this is according to Japan Today, but essential step in the decades-long decommissioning process. More than 1,500 nuclear fuel assemblies, most of them used, but including 200 new ones, need to be pulled out of the pool where they were being stored when the thing happened. TEPCO says it has not yet found any damage to the assemblies, which contain a mixture of uranium and plutonium, but will be monitoring for abnormalities, like we all do all the time. The removal of fuel is part of regular work at any nuclear power plant, but conditions are different from normal, you see, because of the disaster, says a company spokeswoman. It is crucial. It is a big first step toward decommissioning the reactors. Being fully aware of the risks, we are determined to go ahead with the operation continuously, cautiously, and securely.
I feel reassured.
Yeah. Chunks of debris that were sent flying into the pool as reactor buildings exploded have largely been removed. A crane has been installed. A protective hood has been erected over the building's skeleton in a bid to prevent radioactive leaks.
Hoods are good.
They are. They work for detainees. A remotely controlled grabber will sink into the pool and hook onto a fuel assembly, which it will pull up and place inside a fully immersed cask. The 4.5-meter bundles weighing 300 kilograms have to be kept in water throughout the operation to keep them cool. The 91-ton cask will then be hauled from the pool, containing as many as 22 assemblies and a lot of water, to be loaded onto a trailer and taken to a different pool where the operation will be reversed. What could possibly go wrong?
Sounds good to me.
Experts warn that any slip-ups could quickly snowball, and even minor mishaps will create considerable delays to the already long and complicated decommissioning. Says Hiroshi Miyano, a nuclear systems expert and visiting professor in Tokyo, any trouble in this operation will considerably affect the timetable for the entire project. This is an operation TEPCO cannot afford to bungle. His comments reflect an increasingly widespread view that the giant utility may not be capable of dealing with the mess its nuclear plant has created.
I believe in them. I believe in TEPCO.
Yeah, I'm sure they appreciate that. Clean, cheap, safe, too challenging to meter. Our friend, the atom. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. I think this is the first one from the city of Los Angeles. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz. Shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, at harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com. And available as a free podcast through SideshowNetwork.com, SoundCloud.com, TuneInRadio.com, and WWNO.org. And it would be just like CD Machine number 1 not acting up if you'd agree to join with us then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, and thanks to Adam Ferrick here at KCSN Northridge, Los Angeles, for helping with today's broadcast. The email address for this program and the playlist of the music heard here on, and a rip-snorting store, all available for you at harryshearer.com. And, yes, I'm still on Twitter, despite the IPO. I'm copywriting my tweets, though. I'm going to start. I'm going to do it. We'll see how that works out. Check it out. Follow all the events at the Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station for the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from L.A.